It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 7th of March. And we are broadcasting today live from the Mount Argyll Hotel in Letterkenny. And it's part of Local Enterprise Week. Coming up here today from 12 noon, they've got the Made in Donegal Business Summit event. That's open to the public. You can book tickets still, I believe, to attend from 12 till 3. And then there's an open free event for everyone. It's a showcase event from 4 to 7pm. But what does all that mean? Well, stay tuned over the next 3 hours and we'll certainly keep you apprised of that. But we also are continuing with our regular, very popular features, in fact, and we're going to be kicking off with the Friday panel very shortly. I just want to remind you that we are very keen to have your views throughout the course of the next hour. You can WhatsApp and text as normal, 086 60 25000. You can give us a call on 07491 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. We've a bit of a blend of guests today. Joining us from Dublin is Senator Eileen Flynn. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
It's great to have you with us. How are you keeping?
Good, yeah, good. Just all a bit messy in the Oireachtas at the moment, not having committees, because committees are very effective, and it's unfortunate that the Oireachtas can't get on with its business.
Yeah, well, we might touch on that a little later on. In our studio with us here, we have Katie Tyrrell McCafferty. Good morning to you, Katie. Thank you so very much indeed. Community campaigner, people would know, of course. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
And we also have Mary Hart, who's a broadcaster and journalist. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
I'll start with you, Mary, if that's okay. Just listening to the news there from Donal and the kind of language and rhetoric that we're hearing, or maybe it's not rhetoric, but the kind of language we're hearing from the likes of, you know, Ursula von der Leyen, the French leader, Canada, China, Russia, Keir Starmer. There's an awful lot of chat going on at the moment, and there's a big dynamic change happening right around the world, it would seem.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a graduate of politics from many years ago, and I could never in a million years, nor I'm sure any of my colleagues or those in academic spheres analysing political movements could never, ever have predicted this in our lifetime. I think what we can't mince our words. We're looking at a tyrant in America and the capital state at a capitalist state at its very worst. All that Donald Trump is interested in is making money, and if you haven't an ability to make money, then you're not worth being bothered about. In terms of the concerns about global warfare, if that's the right word to use, because the potential is seriously there. Europe has come through, let's not forget, Europe has come through fascism, has come through two world wars, and in living memory. So Europe is very, very well aware of the threats that are on its doorstep, and the leaders of the European states within the European Union and including Britain are not taking lightly the threat that's on their doorstep. It baffles belief that Russia has suddenly become the friend of America, or at least the friend of Donald Trump and his cohorts. And I mean, I think it's very, very important that Europe sends out a very clear message. Look, we have a threat. We have lots of Polish people working in Ireland, lots of great friends, lots of great people. We all know Polish people. Poland is possibly the next.
What makes you say that, though? Why would Poland be next? I mean, he hasn't done very well in Ukraine. He's they're spending 10% of their budget in Russia on war. As we speak right now, the Ukrainians are making gains and Russia's having to retreat. Why is he being painted, or why is Russia, sorry, being painted as this nation that could take Europe over when they can't successfully take Ukraine?
Well, they can't successfully take Ukraine because America and Europe have been helping Ukraine to defend its borders, but it has taken over Crimea in 2014. Russia is an aggressive nation. The Soviets, let's not forget what the Soviet states were like, and I was in them in Berlin and East Berlin back in the 70s, and it was a fearsome place, and it was dominated by army and KGB and fear. And that is what Russia is now. Bear in mind that people in Russia don't know really what's going on at the moment because the media is controlled. You don't know what Vladimir Putin's notions of stepping in around Europe.
No, we don't, and that's exactly my point, that we don't. We are told what they are.
Well, you can go on the past, put it like that.
Okay.
You can go on the past.
But over the last wee while, and I'm sort of trying to play devil's advocate here because there might be a sense of agreement around the table, right?
Yeah.
Over the past, Europe and NATO has inched ever closer to Russia's border. That is a demonstrable fact. So you could argue that in recent years, notwithstanding what happened in Crimea, that it is actually, you know, NATO, a.k.a. Europe and its allies, that is edging its way towards Russia. And what the Russians have done is simply say that, you know, we're not going to be pushed over here.
No, actually, Europe hasn't edged its way into Ukraine into Russia.
NATO membership has, though.
What you've seen is a breakdown and the collapse of the Soviet Union and the independent states emerging out of that. And, you know, that's you're looking at the 1990 and thereabouts. So you are looking at nations that have finally declared themselves independent and great states. And I was in Slovenia last September. Wonderful place to go to. I'd never been to, knew nothing about it. Wonderful people, very European, which is what we are. And no matter what way you look at it, you've got to look at, you don't know enough about the Soviet ex-Soviet Union, so to speak, but Russia in en masse has been seen as an aggressive nation.
Okay, I get you. What's your view on this, Eileen?
I'm very concerned, just like the rest of our group, the Civil Engagement Group, and for the last 2 weeks, we've been highlighting, Greg, the danger of removing the triple lock for this country. And the fears out there, the real fears that's in communities, that communities are facing with not understanding where Ireland is and our neutrality, really, because people automatically make assumptions that we're a neutral country. There's nowhere in our legislation, there's nowhere in anywhere that says that we are a neutral country. And for the government to just remove the treble lock without consultation with the people, without listening to the opposition, is an absolute, is feeding in to what's going on with the manpower around the world.
Just in relation to that, Eileen, if you don't mind, we did hear from Minister of State at the Department of Foreign Affairs yesterday, Minister Neil Richmond, and he said Ireland's not neutral. And he said the mandate is that a review of the triple lock was part of his party's mandate. The people voted to put them back into power. They have the mandate to do this, and they don't need a referendum to do it. He seems to be emboldened by his party and Fianna Fáil's party performance in the election. And it was in their manifesto. The people voted for this, effectively, is what he said.
I don't believe the people did vote for this. I think the people and in this country, many people I've spoken to, are very, very scared at the minute. Again, it's understanding neutrality, where we are. Like, of course, the majority of Ireland stands with Ukraine, and what happened in the White House was a shame. And in my opinion, it's a madman that has control of a nuclear button right in front of him, and he's using that to his power. But on a more home level, Greg, I think there's a big conversation to be had. I think the people, it should go to the people. It should be a referendum around even the treble lock. Mm-hmm. People are very scared, as I just said. But again, like, it's men, and no disrespect to Minister Richmond, is like, again, it's false information to the people. As soon as we remove that treble lock, it impacts on our neutrality, and the involved, like, Russia is no threat to us at the moment. But if we were to remove the treble lock or to join NATO, well, then Russia would be a threat to us.
Okay, and we are going to be and have been, as Eileen went into it, the triple lock conversation, because the two of them are pretty much intertwined. Katie Tyrrell McCafferty, what is your view, I suppose, on the re-establishment or the redrawing of the world order, so to speak, and also to our triple lock? And I'll come back to you, Mary, on the triple lock as well.
The triple lock has to stay, and I don't think that, listen, I'm not saying people don't take elections very seriously, but most people don't read manifestos, right? And when was the treble lock ever a talking point during the election campaign?
I don't recall it being one.
No. So therefore, Eileen is absolutely correct that that should not be on the agenda. The government should not be able to change that without consultation of the people, because at the end of the day, it will be mainly working class young men mm-hmm. that have to pay for this. Do you know
okay,
what I mean?
Well, talk just in relation to because I think we kind of by accident, not design. It seems to be there's an agreement on Donald Trump here, because I saw you nodding as Mary was speaking, and Eileen's made her comments as well. Prior to his election, we were looking at an endless war, effectively. And even last week, Volodymyr Zelensky said the end of this war is very, very, very far away. That's what he said. And we're talking about our children, right? But what about the Russian children and the Ukrainian children? Thousands of them dying every week. Over a million, it's estimated, have died so far. Do you not welcome Donald Trump's intervention in any way, that now we have the Ukrainians heading to the Middle East next week to talk a quick and lasting peace? Or are you just that your default position is Donald Trump is all bad?
Well, I don't have any trust in Donald Trump whatsoever. I think mistakes were made. I think when the Russians were on the back foot, that's when Zelensky in about 2023, was it? I think it, maybe he should have gone in and negotiated. But there are also millions of people dying in another part of the world at the moment, which, funny enough, there's a different conversation about how we come to peace in that part of the world.
Well, I presume you're not talking about Yemen. There's people dying all over the world. You're probably on about Palestine, aren't you?
But, I'm not, you know. Palestine, yeah, but Yemen is also a massive problem. So that's what I'm saying is, you know...
But he's also... I know that you've got these ridiculous AI videos and this threat of wiping the place out, but Donald Trump also, and again, I have to play devil's advocate here, or else we'd all just be nodding at each other.
No, I agree.
He is the only one that seems to be actually driving at peace in that area. You know what I mean?
At what cost, though, to ordinary Palestinians?
Yeah, but we have to be careful as observers that it's at no cost to us.
Yes, of course we don't want anything else, but as a human being and as someone who... I'm not a pacifist, because I could see definitely a need for World War II, right, or the Spanish Civil War, but I'm someone that believes in peace and thinks that basically a load of men normally get together and decide that they don't like each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this, you know, American and British intervention in most places it's gone tits up, basically. Do you know what I mean? I mean, look at what they did. You know, the Americans funded the Mujahideen against the Soviets, right?
Yeah.
Who then became ISIS, and then we had so.
But no one's copybook's clean. That unfortunately.
No one's copybook's clean. But at what cost is some of this peace
okay.
that has been?
Well, but at what cost is no peace? It's not a cost we're paying in blood.
No,
we aren't paying it, and for us to sort of say, well, Trump is wrong on this. Well, if we could be looking at another 500,000 people dead if he hadn't got involved.
But we need to look at Trump's motivations for this. Why is Donald Trump...
Well, it's obviously money and power, because that's what motivates any war.
Yeah.
There's no secret to that.
But, you know, I don't trust the guy. I don't trust the man whatsoever.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He's an uneducated buffoon.
Okay.
Right, because you can only see that with the two statements he's made in the last 2 days.
He is also someone that is incredibly respected amongst world leaders around the world, it would seem, because he saved
they're
Trump,
frightened of him.
And they say so. And at least half America, and indeed more of America, approve of him now. So they might not accept your framing of him. But that's fine. We're a long way from America. The triple lock, Mary Hart. As I said, we heard yesterday, look, the quiet bit out loud, people say that. I don't really know what it means. But anyway, we aren't neutral. We're not a neutral country. We've never really been neutral. Listen, we facilitated Allies flyovers during the Second World War when it suited us, right? So we can't go back to the Second World War and quote on neutrality either. We have to be honest about that. But people, seemingly the majority of people, want to vote on the triple lock. What's your view on it, Mary?
Well, as you rightly say, you know, we've been selectively neutral. And really, if, you know, go back into the history, it was De Valera's decision to determine that Ireland was neutral going into the Second World War, primarily motivated by his hatred of Britain, and he wasn't going to join forces with the enemy that he had just fought a war with himself. So the neutrality has sat there, not meaning anything much until it was challenged. And it, we are, and then De Valera did say, Ireland would be neutral until threatened, and that's the important aspect. Neutrality has been, as I say, selective, and my belief of the triple lock is, I just see it as a nonsense that you have to go through to the United Nations to get approval, and, you know, what's the difference? None of us knew what the triple lock was, to be quite honest.
Well,
none
of us knew until... But say, for instance...
A couple of years ago.
The UN involvement in Lebanon, right? So it's a peacekeeping exercise. It's there to uphold the peace. It's quite clear. So we can go in there... and we can do that stuff as a now the way they want to do it is and let's not forget now the cabinet agreed and then the government with a healthy majority pass it, so whatever they want to do they can do now, right? So without the UN, so now we have a situation whereby the UN don't have to be involved, that it can be a little bit more political, that it can be a little less neutral, that it can be backing our allies in inverted commas, and that is a huge step away from where, unless we determine it with a referendum, anecdotally it seems that the people of this country don't want to go.
Well, I do believe that the people of this country see neutrality in a big, broad sweep, and they don't actually realise how detailed it has to be. And I really honestly don't see why Ireland has to go to a talking shop in New York to find out how many people it can send off, even as a peacekeeping force. And, you know, we are responsible on the edge of Europe to have some involvement in protecting our shores and the shores of Europe that lies to the east of us. And I cannot see that the triple lock has gone... I mean, it's only going from 12 people to 50 people, soldiers.
Yeah, but that's one element of it.
Well, of course it is. But, you know, you can't drift along and think we're neutral and we sit along.
But why can't we?
Because we have got a responsibility.
Eileen,
we have a responsibility.
Eileen, you wanted to come in, please?
Well, Greg, for the first time in my life, and probably for many of your listeners, we all thought right up until 2-3 years ago, we were a neutral country. Now we're hearing stuff like, oh, we were never neutral. We got involved in World War II, plane stop and the way over. I get that. And we've put bills in to make our airways more safer for the people of this country. And again, I'll put it back to your listeners. The majority of your listeners would believe that Ireland is a neutral country. If you are to interfere in the treble lock now, that's going to create a big problem for this country, and we will be no longer a neutral country. And you spoke about Donald Trump, like conflict. I've done a lot of training throughout my life on conflict resolution. And there's one thing I'll say about conflict. It can't be just one side of a story and power. It's conflict and negotiation and ending wars has to be a give and take. It's not all about power. But Donald Trump sits in the White House and throws out big statements.
But just in relation to that, Eileen, if you listen to the rhetoric from the French, for an example, their solution is that Russia is beaten back and weakened to the point that it's no longer a threat to Europe. That is not taking all sides. That is not looking for a peaceful resolution. That's fighting talk, and they are speaking, in inverted commas, on behalf of us. We have to beat them back so we send more Ukrainian young men and women, to an extent, into the meat grinder to defeat Russia to the point that we can sit on the West Coast and Central Europe in comfort. So Russia has to get something out of this too.
And there's one thing about us, like, you know, we can make up our own policies. What's wrong with us as a country that we can't do that? We're too aligned with Europe. And again, I don't know if I'm with or against Europe. I haven't looked into that big debate at the moment. But, you know, we should be able to stand on our own 2 feet. And when it comes to, again, Greg, for me, it's the people. And as Kate has said earlier, the majority that will be impacted in this is ordinary working class men from minority groups will be impacted by it. And I never heard one conversation from somebody from the army and somebody who understands more around the triple lockdown than any of us do. So, like, you know, again, the government, this, I don't believe this is their expertise. They're just going with Europe as they do with everything else.
In relation to that, right, you know, like, is there not a position that we could adopt, Mary? And I know you wanted to come in there and you can answer this if that's okay as well, whereby, you know, why is Russia, the United States and Ukraine going to Saudi Arabia to negotiate peace? Why aren't we a neutral country we can demonstrate how you can achieve peace through conversation, not in any side of this whatsoever, and we could host them here in Ireland, but we can't because we've taken such a strong anti-Russian, pro-West position. You know, we should be hosting peace talks, shouldn't we? Not talking about sending soldiers to fight with these people.
Well, the reason that they're going to Saudi Arabia is because that's where the chosen place is by the Americans, and that's where they're going to have their
talks.
But
you take my point.
They wouldn't come to Ireland.
That could have been us if we were neutral.
No, I don't. That's not the reason why they did. The reason why they didn't come to Ireland has nothing got to do with neutrality or not. You have got to just bear in mind that when De Valera insisted that Ireland was a neutral country, he said until attacked. You know, until threatened, until, you know. So we are threatened at the moment. Whether we're threatened.
We haven't been attacked.
But if the Russian army sat on its boats, as we saw just before they invaded
Ukraine. Yeah, but we're being targeted by association.
Well, you know, you can't sit on the fence forever. And we have an army. Why do we bother having an army? Put it like that. Why don't we just say we don't have an army? We don't need an army because we're never going to be threatened.
We don't really have a battle-ready army.
Well, and the army would actually challenge you on that. We have boats and military weapons and boats around the coastline to protect it
as
well.
They're tied up because we don't have a navy adequately staffed to actually run the boats.
Because we know at the back of our minds that we will be protected by the rest of Europe. And, you know, bear in mind again that Europe came through 2 world wars in the last century, and the European Union was born out of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and that was to try and keep peace and keep the countries to working together, not to be fighting with each other and bombing each other to bits. And, you know, we were lucky that we weren't blown to bits. The rest of Europe was blown to bits in 2 world wars.
But I wonder why we perhaps weren't.
Well, we were British in the First World War. Yeah. We weren't neutral in the First World War. You know, we were part of Britain. We were lucky that we weren't blown
not
to bits.
Because
the attitudes might have been...
Yeah, but that was not by choice.
We're talking
about things we have power over ourselves.
Well, we don't actually have power. Our government has decided...
I mean, I'll come back to you for one last word on this.
Just out of curiosity for myself, who's threatening us as a country?
Well,
because I'd love to know that answer.
We're part of Europe. They're not going to be threatening Ireland per se. They will be threatening Europe, and we're on the edge of Europe. We're on the Atlantic, and you know the Russian vessels were sitting in our waters under the guise of the fishermen. You know, the fishermen solved the problem. You know,
geography wise, I get that. But as a nation ourselves and as someone who's always been respected, Greg, around the world for being a neutral country, all this talk coming out from the government, again, it's worrying for me as a legislator. Imagine how worrying it is for your ordinary...
My concern about it is that, you know, we had a situation after the Oval Office meeting where all of a sudden we have to pump 800 billion euro into an army, 100 million has to be signed off to cabinet to go to Ukraine. All this conversation, 2 days later, on social media, Zelensky goes, actually, I'm sorry how that meeting went. I want to sign the minerals deal. I want to get a resolution to this as quick as possible. And Ireland has stuck its head above the parapet, talked a load of nonsense. Those two people are going to be meeting now, and we're sort of in wilderness. And I still maintain that Micheál Martin's in for a rude awakening in the White House. Cathy Tyrrell. McLafferty. Kathy,
no,
sorry.
It's just,
I'm
just,
giving you double barrel names.
You don't even have them.
You don't even have them, Kathy.
No, and it's Katie, by the way.
Sorry, Katie. Well,
Greg, you should know
stressed.
That.
Stressed.
Anyway, no, where were we? Yeah, I agree that we've got to sit the two leaders down round the table. Why don't we ask the Ukrainian citizens what they want? You know, some of them in Ukraine.
That is the strongest call from Donald Trump. He wants an election in Ukraine. ASAP.
Right. And it's well known that during wars, people don't run elections because they've got other things to do.
Yeah.
Churchill did it, right?
Well, Zelensky won't want to do it. And you're right,
yeah,
with martial law.
The thing is, yeah, but we need to do some fact-checking here because some people believe everything that Donald Trump tells them, right? And when they called... Donald Trump called Zelensky a dictator because he hadn't had an election.
But he said he forgot he said that.
Yeah, yeah. He said... See, that's what I'm saying, but people are running with that already,
yeah, but
on
you see,
social
with
media.
Someone like Donald Trump, you go with their actions, not the words, I think, because I don't think he knows what he's saying half the time. And I don't mean that in being senile or anything. I just think he shoots from the hip and some of it lands and
but
some of it doesn't.
But then what I do is I go on to... So I like a bit of TikTok, right? And I go onto TikTok and I see, like, loads of Americans, right, repeating the stuff that Donald Trump has said. And that's how it spreads.
It really does frustrate me, anyone who repeats and parrots anything anyone says without checking themselves.
Yes.
And I don't care where their political...
Absolutely. Okay. I agree with you, because that's why I fact-check stuff.
Yeah, and I enjoy doing that. Okay, listen, Katie, my apologies. My sorries. That goes...
That's
I have
right.
no sleep. I haven't slept in 2 days. Katie, and also Mary Hart, broadcaster and journalist, and we have joining us from Dublin as well, Senator Eileen Flynn. We'll be back with more from our guests after this break. We're in the middle of a very interesting Friday panel. We have Senator Eileen Flynn, Katie Tyrrell McCafferty and Mary Hart. And you, a caller says, whatever your opinion of Trump, the fact is that this new US administration is half a dozen steps ahead in the game of the world political chess. UK and EU have now increased defence spending. Ukraine will shortly sign the deal on lucrative resources, and soon Russia will become a political ally in the coming war with China in the Far East. This is the main focus for Trump. Zelensky and Europe are just inconvenient sideshows. That being said, Trump did suggest that all of the main powers, likes of him, the United States, China and Russia, that all, if they all equally half their spending on defence, their countries would be better off. Did someone say the media controlled... I'll have to come back to that because it's just a bit broken up. Resend that text if you don't mind. Morning, Greg. Good points, Greg, on your stance on NATO closing in on Russian borders. There's more going on with the world leaders than we're being told. Thank you. Morning, panel. I can see another Zelensky-style Oval Office dressing down for Micheál Martin next week when he pops in with the shamrocks. I hope he has the stones to challenge Trump rather than just bend the knee. And it's very interesting because the way the Oval Office works now and the media side of things work now is that there's very pro-Trump people in there that fire questions up with a view, the whole Zelensky suit thing. And I'd be concerned that Micheál Martin's going in there having to defend the European position because of the way things are. Right, okay, we may come back to that, but just some other stuff. There have been a number of examples recently of people in possession of very serious child abuse, exploitation images, receiving suspended sentences. Yet this week, one individual had 3,000 images on his computer, received a suspended sentence. Then in the same week, we're seeing custodial sentences for fraud-related matters. So a lady, I think she had defrauded the state from 50 or 60,000 euro and ended up getting locked up. Now, these are what we hear about and what we see in the news. But do you have any concern, and I'll start with you, Senator Flynn, I suppose, as a legislator. Do you have any concern that, as well, by the way, our prisons are literally wedged at the moment, okay? Do you have concerns of some of the suspended sentence we're seeing for the most horrific of crimes, as most right-thinking people would see, and then we see custodial sentences for other stuff that maybe outside of prison rehabilitation would be more fitting? What's your view on that?
I'm just going to go back to January of 2022, when I brought in an amendment to the Child Protection Bill, And that amendment is to not use the term child pornography, because children can't consent. They're under the age of 18. And the terminology that I'm looking for in our all of our like courts, all of our history books, is to get rid of the term child pornography to child sexual abuse by materials. So I have that in front of the Minister for Justice at the moment, looking for a meeting just last week, we emailed Minister Jim O'Callaghan looking for a meeting with him. So that, and it's simple, it's a very simple piece of legislation, but also it's very effective as well. Greg, I don't believe we should have, and I know a lot of Fianna Fáil and Fianna Gael, the Law and Order parties, are talking about having more prisons. For me, it's about intervention, it's about prevention of crime on the streets. And when you talk about the serious side of crime, like child pornography, I have two children myself, two little girls, and the thoughts of any of their images being anywhere over the internet, or anyone having their images, would absolutely kill me. And I do think there should be a sentence, a rehabilitation, if at all possible.
Do you think we need a review of sentencing guidelines in that area too? Because we talked earlier on about the will of the people being respected in terms of, you know, Ireland's neutrality, etc. I think certainly in relation to some of these crimes, because for every image that one of these people have on their computer, you can only imagine what one child had to go through.
You know, and
I don't think that the courts aren't making that connection.
Yeah, and it should. Like, I do think our justice system, our judges need to be trained as well, if you want. And I know it might sound a bit stupid when I'm saying this, but like, judges don't have a lot of knowledge when it comes to art. Like, do you know the traffic light offences, road traffic offences? Mm. Like, I know two or three traveller women who's in the docus because of road traffic offences. Now, we could deal with that in a different way than sending.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Incarcerating people for stuff you could be very easily rehabilitated with, and yet at the same time,
I know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm dealing at the moment, Greg, with a young. I know of a young man at the moment who's in prison. And it was the only option for him. He wanted rehabilitation. He's a drug addict. He wanted help and support. But it's unfortunate we don't have them wraparound services for people in this country, like rehabilitation for drugs, rehabilitation for drink. That good wraparound support for people. So this young man committed a crime purposely. Now, this is what I'm hearing from him, purposely to go to prison to get the supports that he needs to come off drugs. Now, a lot of your listeners would hear me say in the Oireachtas, outside the Oireachtas, that people can be rehabilitated back into communities. We can have community services, community work for people, programs that support people. I do believe from some crimes you can turn around from, but around child pornography, I genuinely believe that they should get what's coming to them, or sexual assault, any of those kind of serious crimes. And again, we have people in prison, Greg, for, as I would say, petty crimes that shouldn't be in prison.
Okay.
Again, people become institutionalised, they reoffend,
in relation to that, we saw over 100,000 crimes committed while 40,000 people were on bail. Katie, what's your view on this? I mean, is it just sensationalising or really easy to sort of point at the differences in, you know, custodial versus suspended sentences? Or do you think there's something really genuine there that we need to be looking at?
I think that we need to be looking at really heavy custodial sentences for people that are using images of children. Because a lot of people think, right, ah, sure, it's only images. They actually didn't do anything to the child. But that child was being abused somewhere in the world or whatever. And we need to bring in tough sentencing, tougher sentencing for rape, sexual assault, child abuse, tougher sentencing on there. And then you've, as you say, the petty crimes. TV licences.
Defrauding revenue.
You know,
like, I mean,
right?
I'm not in any way condoning it, but how can you equate?
And it depends on, like, someone who defrauds revenue 10 grand is very different to someone who defrauds revenue for a million. You know what I mean? There's varying degrees of that. And then if someone defrauds the state with benefits, let's just say, basically you've taken that money away from your own community. Therefore, do your payback in your community, like with community services and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Mm.
You know, the big shame of it is when you have to face your own community. So, let's look at that. But, you know,
some people don't have shame either and see being in the papers or on a website as a badge of honour. But I do take your point.
Yeah, but the thing is what we need to do is keep these dangerous individuals that are... And let's be honest, there are some women that are involved in child pornography as well. It's mainly men.
It's 95%.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there are some women that have facilitated that. So therefore, I don't want these people on the streets anywhere around children or vulnerable adults, you know.
Yeah. Right, okay, Mary Hart, what's your view?
Well, we first of all, we don't have universal sentencing in Ireland, and every case is dealt with on its own, evidence, victim impact, Garda statements. The sentencing is then crafted. Proportionality is what's used in Ireland. The only crime is murder, and there's no way a judge can make any difference. So it's a life sentence for murder. Everything else is based around all of the facts, listening to the victim's impact, listening to the accused victims.
But just interject without being argumentative.
Yeah.
It depends on which judge you're in front of.
No, it doesn't.
Well,
no, it doesn't.
Okay.
No, it doesn't.
I won't mention any names, but
actually
does.
There is a jury. There is a jury in the courtroom. There is a jury, and they decide really what happens, and the sentence then is determined. And you have got to put your faith in, I do absolutely and utterly agree, with Eileen and Katie that, you know, the issue here is where you put people after the sentence has been passed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those should actually be into community service as opposed to going into a prison. Now, a day in a prison is not good. Getting 5 years in a prison is definitely not good. And I can't think of anybody who's happy to go to prison. So at the same time, you can't compare apples and oranges. You know, fraud and child abuse are two very different things. But
the whole point. You're seeing custodial sentences for one, and then you're saying particular judges that are seeing... Well,
I disagree, Greg. I absolutely disagree.
Demonstrate it for you off air. If you wish, I don't say stuff that I can't sort of back up. And there is one particular judge that has a reputation for.
But who's given that reputation? Who has given the judge that reputation?
He himself.
He has said, "Oh, I'm not very good."
No, he has consistently given non-custodial sentences for the possession of child abuse images.
You will have to then. Many of us actually sit in a courtroom when the case is actually being heard and all of the evidence in front of you and everything else. So
you
have got to look at. And I'm not. I am not defending any judge.
Can I just say,
Greg? And I think it's fair to say not everybody has the right to be in front of a jury. And like in many cases, it is just a judge. You know, and I know the judge you're speaking about. And I think, for me, like. You know, if it was a black person in front of that judge and he committed a petty crime or a fraud, how long would that person get?
No, we don't know. That's speculation. I understand where you're coming from, but I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but people will be able to read between the lines. Senator, stay right where you are, if you don't mind. We are in the company of Senator Eileen Flynn. We also have Katie with us as well, and Mary, Katie Tyrrell-McCafferty, and Mary Hart. And it's been really interesting so far. We have to take a commercial break. I'll tell you much more about what's coming up here shortly. Thanks for all your texts. Keep them coming through. Really invaluable to sort of get a sense of what you guys are thinking out there as well. We'll get to more of those after these. We're broadcasting live today from the Mount Argyle Hotel, and thanks to Terry and the team, always incredibly welcoming of us, and they look after us very well here. And also taking place here today is the Made in Donegal Business Summit event. It runs from 12 noon to 3 p.m. You can still register, actually, to attend that. Just go to the Leo website. And also, too, there's an open event between 4 and 7 p.m. With a showcase of business and what have you. We've a ton of guests over the next wee while as well, so stay tuned for all of that. An estimated 400,000 people can't afford to pay their electricity bills, and there's no reductions in sight. In fact, prices are going the other way. Mary Hart, do you believe the government should roll back in its statements that no supports, no further universal supports will be given in the next budget? Would you favour targeted support for these people that need it? Do you think it's at a stage now where, you know, we need to sort of get away from supporting people to pay, you know, day-to-day bills? I don't know. What's your view, Mary?
Well, my first view is that our electricity is way, way too expensive for everybody. And certainly I do believe that there should be some methodology applied so that, you know, those who cannot afford the soaring electric bills should be given some sort of support for that. It's the privatisation of electricity has been the problem, and that initially was that, well, the ESB had control of everything, and therefore they had no competition. Of course, what happens with competition, the cartels, it becomes a cartel, and there's all of them have pretty much the same price. And I know that if you switch from one to the other every year, you get, but many of us actually get round to doing that. And I know I'm going to throw the spanner into the works now, but, you know, I think in Ireland we have such, and we've experienced this from the fall down of so many power lines, and I was without electricity for one full week, and I know how bloody difficult it was. We have a terrible network, and it needs to be upgraded, so the government really needs to put that in. But unfortunately, the spanner into the works is, I do believe that we have to look at the more modern versions of nuclear power. We depend on it. We get it from France. We get it from Britain. And then we say we're not unhappy for it.
There was a time,
you know,
I would have recoiled at the mere thought of it, but the state of the world right now, a nuclear power plant feels kind of okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
State of things, right?
Yeah.
I'll come back to you, Mary. Katie, what's your view? I mean, the government has said it wants to move away from these type of supports, right? And they didn't differentiate either between targeted and universal supports. It just seems to be, even yesterday, I think it was the finance minister stated, you know, we can't keep doing this.
Yeah, Mary, the now or near, though, the whole problem with this started with privatisation. Absolutely.
Well, we can do nothing about that now.
No, but that's, you know, you try and warn people that this is what will happen when business, you know, when state companies are sold off, because we need to look at how much profit the ESB has made. Maybe they should be forced to do profit sharing with its customers. I overpaid my electricity bill for a number of years. Do you remember then when all that was out? And they gave us 45 quid back.
Yeah.
And I'd overpaid, what was it, something like 200. So, and then they were going to, and now they're actually talking about that the cost of the repairs for Storm Owen, are going to be €125 per person that we're going to pay.
Yeah.
So I want to say, can you not just take that off the money that you already owe me when I've been overpaying for years, right? And I could do that with a small business in Letterkenny. I can't do that with the ESB. Why not?
But also, I'd like to know why our bills are so much higher compared to the rest of Europe. And I don't care which political party it is, but I would have thought that it is the role of our government, whatever the makeup of it is, to say, right, one second here now. Electricity is so much cheaper down the country. We generated 50% of our electricity through green stuff last month, for February. why are your bills so high? That's supposed to be all cheaper and from the wind and the sea and the solar and stuff. You know, I think it's the role of a government to sort of find out why our charges are so high, rather than guaranteeing electricity companies their profits. I want to bring the senator in on this as well. Okay. Senator Flynn, your views, please.
I'll just go back to the question, Greg, around taking the supports, like just doing away now with the supports. I don't think that should be the case. Tomorrow marks International Women's Day, and I'm thinking of the thousands of women in this country that can't afford to feed their children, can't afford their electricity, their heating bills, etc. And that's not me being cheesy or anything like it, because I know these women. I know these women who are, and many, many women, single parents in Donegal also. And in some cases in the houses in Donegal, it's 2-3 times more expensive to run than your top of the range house, say here in Dublin or in Letterkenny. So I don't believe that they should roll back in these supports. If anything, some families need more support, and the problem is maybe the universal pay, because, like, you know, I put myself into the situation. I'm a politician. I'm on a good wage. I'm entitled to the universal money. I'm not going to say I don't want it. I'll be thankful for it.
Like, I know what you're saying, though. Senator, unfortunately, just very, very briefly, if you don't mind, just...
My point is, Greg, they should put in measures in place for poor families and families that need it. Because if you walk into a local shop this minute, you're going to pay over €3 for a pound of butter.
Yeah.
And before that wasn't the case. It was €2, €1.50.
For sure.
Like, the cost of living has gone through the roof, and there's people who are really, really struggling in this country.
Senator Eileen Flynn, thanks so much for joining us. Lovely to see you. Chat to you soon. Take care. Thank you very much indeed. It's been lovely having you on the show, as it has Katie Tyrrell McCafferty, community campaigner. Katie, thank you. Really enjoy your inputs, as always.
Pleasure to come along, Greg.
And Mary Hart, thank you so very much. And breaking news, folks, Mary Hart is getting high-speed broadband. No, it has to be said, because
yes,
we talk
has,
a lot about
yes.
negativities in yeah. this county, right? Yeah. But we also have to talk about the infrastructural developments, okay? And Mary is going to get decent broadband, so next time she joins us, we'll actually be able to see and hear her clearly, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I won't be wobbling all over the place.
But I believe it when I see it. How's that?
Well, I would agree with you there. I will too. And by the way, just to say, I know International Women's Day tomorrow, and I am very warmed and hearted that you have a bunch of women here,
yes.
and your producer, a female, and two lovely girls there helping out.
It's literally my life, surrounded by people that make
so
me look
So it's nice
good.
To see that
the
women
panel
have,
was great
yes.
today. I think even
really...
though we had conflicting views on some things, it was just a lovely discussion.
Thank you so very much. I actually genuinely enjoyed just sitting in the middle of it too. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll be back with so much more live from the Mount Argyle Hotel in the next couple of hours, but we're going to take a break now for the news and the obituary notes.